Let's take a look a little further. See, these guys are terrible cynics. These guys always have to cover their butts. Now, in the late 70s, early 80s, mid-80s, the CIA, through the Department of Defense, smuggled some 28 C-130 Hercules aircraft. You know, these big four-wing, four-engine, high-wing, turboprop cargo carriers. They're real pretty airplanes. They're still flying today. They've been around a long time. Smuggled 28 of them out through the U.S. Forest Service. CIA, using the Pentagon as cover, sent 28 to the Forest Service, and the Forest Service put 28 C-130s into the hands of private contractors. TNG Aviation, Hemet Valley, there's a whole list of them that got these C-130s. I mean, these are very expensive airplanes for the purpose of fighting forest fires. Well, the problem was that of these 28 C-130s, about 16 or 17 of them turned up in Peru, Colombia, Panama, Mexico, Costa Rica, Angola, Iran, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia. Not many forest fires in Saudi Arabia. It's a desert. Okay? One of these C-130s, in fact, in 1996 was seized in Mexico City with $1 billion worth of cocaine on board. And the case reached the court in Chicago. You didn't hear much about that, did you? Now, some of these C-130s were flying 2 and 3,000 kilos of cocaine at a time onto El Toro Marine Air Station in Southern California, where the Chief of Air Operations, Colonel James Sabo, found out about it, and he was murdered in 1991, ruled a suicide. And it's kind of strange that it was ruled a suicide because the fatal shotgun blast, which was fired, was established to have been fired while he was unconscious as a result of a skull fracture. As a matter of fact, the shotgun was shot so far down his throat it sheared off his uvula, that's that little dangly thing, before the trigger was pulled because all the powder was on the other side. Yet, it was ruled a suicide. In the course of investigations in 94 and 95, I uncovered what turned out to be 109 suicides in the military under suspicious circumstances. Now, I want you to look at this letter because they always have to send in the clowns, I mean the lawyers. To George Leonard, Associate Chief, U.S. Forest Service, Kenneth Cohen, Assistant General Counsel, Research and Operations Division. And this is all about the C-130s, and I'm going to slide this up because I want you to read it right along with me because you may not believe me, but it says in the last sentence, DOD, you understand, is the Pentagon. Apparently, DOD thinks that by having the Forest Service as the intermediary, if any future aircraft are used in drug smuggling, the Forest Service and not DOD will suffer the adverse publicity. Your tax dollars at work, folks. All they're worried about is who's going to take the blame. Now, there's one reason and one reason only why the CIA deals drugs. Not to fund covert operations, not to make George Bush rich, but to support the U.S. economy. I'm going to convince you of that. And then when we get to Afghanistan, you're going to see one of the reasons why it was so important. June 27th, 1999, New York Stock Exchange chief meets Colombian top rebel commander, Bogota. A guy by the name of Dick Grasso gets in a jet plane, flies to Bogota, climbs in an armor-plated limo, and goes up and meets with the FARC guerrillas. Now, everybody knows in Colombia, right? Everybody deals drugs, right? Everybody. Left, right, center, government, paramilitaries, they all deal drugs. And what Dick Grasso said when he was meeting with the FARC commander was, "Will you please invest your drug money in Wall Street?" That's what he said. It's in the story right there. He didn't say drug money, but he said, "Let us manage your funds." And it's, you know, everybody knows the only way that FARC makes money is by taxing the cocaine trade. Black and white. Didn't hear that on Peter Jennings, did you? Okay, so he's asking for money to Wall Street. And you know what the FARC guys told him? They said, "No, senor, we would much rather keep our money in Colombia for the benefit of the Colombian people." A year later, President Bill Clinton announces Plan Colombia. You know, and we since displaced 2 million people from their homes by spraying glyphosate from Monsanto. And we're spraying food crops, of course, and we're just driving the cocaine production onto lands controlled by the paramilitaries. And we're getting ready to go to war in Colombia again because there's oil there. But let's stay on the drug theme for a minute. Now, everybody here knows, right, that if we walk into a bank with $10,001 in cash, the bank teller has to fill out a report saying that we're possibly money launderers, right? $10,001. Well, the government was smart. They realized that some entities handle so much cash, it's kind of stupid to fill out these currency transaction reports. So they passed a law in 1996 exempting certain classes of business who could trade all the cash they wanted to. A bank, that makes sense. The Department of the U.S. government, yes. State governments, yes. But look at the fourth one. A listed entity other than a bank whose common stock or analogous equity interests are listed on the NYSE or the American Stock Exchange or are designated as a NASDAQ national market security. If you have a company with a stock ticker symbol on Wall Street, you can launder all the cash you want. It's legal. Absolutely legal. At the bottom, a financial institution other than a bank that is a listed entity that qualifies for an exemption to the extent of its domestic operations, that gets to foreign banks that establish correspondent banking relationships with banks licensed to do business in America. We'll see about that in a minute. Now, in June of 2000, and we've been covering this in From the Wilderness for a long time, and much of this economic research I owe to Catherine Austin Fitz, a former Assistant Secretary of Housing, former Managing Director of the Wall Street Investment Bank, Dylan Reed, who has been brutalized horribly. She worked for the first Bush administration and was fired for being honest. Then she was consulting for the Clinton administration, and she was almost indicted for being honest. I mean, you know, so what the heck. But if you look at this, in June of 2000, and this is Lowell Bergman, one of those guys that the lefty progressives love to rave about, but because Bergman doesn't tell the whole truth, you know, he defines the limits. But he had this special on PBS about some companies that Janet Reno, again, not one of my favorite people, had called in to the U.S. Department of Justice, not because they were laundering drug money, but because they were laundering too much drug money. It was obvious. The companies are Hewlett-Packard, Ford, Sony, General Motors, Whirlpool, General Electric, and Philip Morris. Major American corporations. Philip Morris, by the way, is being sued by 28 departments, states, in Colombia for smuggling Marlboros into Colombia and taking boatloads of drug cash back to New York, and also for doing Enron-like bookkeeping, adding the drug profits directly to their the drug cash to their net profits. Look, according to the UN, according to the IMF, according to the Department of Justice, $500 to $600 billion a year in liquid drug cash, most of it laundered here in the United States. Just a thought, I mean, I was a detective, but $600 billion a year is too much to stuff in a pillow. You have to do something with it, like take over the world. As a matter of fact, in January of last year, Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, author of a minority report from the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations on Correspondent Banking, and this is a copy of, this is the first page of the report. I just wanted to show you what the report looks like. But he said, if you go down at the bottom, it says, inattention by and disinterest by U.S. banks in screening the foreign banks they take in as clients have allowed rogue foreign banks and their criminal clients to carry on money laundering and other criminal activity in the United States. And yes, that's true, and to protect the narcotics industry. And then if you read the report a little bit further, it says J.P. Morgan, who was, by the way, the largest creditor of Enron, Bank of America, we're in their home city, Citigroup and First Union are laundering all this drug money. It says down here, $1 trillion laundered annually. That's from the U.S. Senate. And it says $500 billion through the United States banking system. The rest of it's going through Wall Street. Now, we're going to show you the power of a drug dollar here in a second. As a matter of fact, well, let me just show you a little bit. Let's just go a little bit further to paint the picture. Now, I have been saying nonstop since September the 11th. Actually, I was saying it before that. But clearly since September the 11th, that the current regime, the current empire, and we are an empire now, get that straight, has crossed a line of criminality from which it cannot turn back. It has no alternative now but to proceed apace until it imposes a full dictatorship, a full fascist state, because the level of criminality is so out of the closet they just don't care anymore. But I saw this back in May when Citibank, Citigroup, by the way, who's on the board of directors at Citigroup? John Deutsch, the former CIA director, Robert Rubin of Goldman Sachs, former Secretary of the Treasury, a woman named Nora Slatkin, the former CIA executive director, that's the number three position, Frank Wisner, there's a whole bunch of CIA connections, but those are some big names on Citigroup. They paid $12 billion to buy Banco Nacional de Mexico, Banamex, second largest bank in Mexico. It is an overt, open drug money laundering bank in Mexico. So overt that a brilliant Mexican newspaper named Por Esto wrote a story about 2 years ago about the bank's owner, Roberto Hernandez. This is what's going on his property. That is not sugar. It's not sweet and low. That's cocaine. He owns most of the Yucatan Peninsula. In fact, the natives refer to it as the Cocaine Peninsula. There's landing strips all over the place. There's refueling for boats. And they published all this documenting that Hernandez was a major drug trafficker. By the way, in August of 2000, Bill Clinton vacationed for 10 days on Hernandez's property. By the way, after winning the Mexican election, President-elect Vicente Fox, the first day after winning the election, paid a courtesy call on Roberto Hernandez. As a matter of fact, Roberto Hernandez shared a media consultant with George W. Bush. Now, Hernandez sued Por Esto. He lost. He appealed. He lost. My good friend Al Giordano, who publishes a great website, narconews.com, expanded on the story, wrote it in English. He's in Mexico, published it. Hernandez sued him in New York, and just a few months ago, he lost. And as a result of that, all internet journalists, a small victory for us, are now afforded the same First Amendment protection as is the New York Times. Okay? That's why you cannot be afraid to tell the truth, but sometimes you have to get up right in their face to tell them the truth, boldly, and you have to get out there and you have to make them suffer with it. But Hernandez now sits on the board of directors with Robert Rubin, John Deutsch at Citigroup. They don't care if you know how criminal they are anymore. They are laughing at you. And they hold the rest of the American people in utter contempt. And the headline that I wrote in the May issue of From the Wilderness was "All Hell Breaks Loose." I had no idea. Now let's talk about how powerful a drug dollar is. Can we have the lights up, please? All right. Let's take a little look at CIA and Wall Street. The National Security Act of 1947 was written by Clark Clifford, an aide to Harry Truman, longtime Democratic Party powerhouse. He wrote the act that created the CIA. Who can tell me what his profession was? Wall Street lawyer and banker. As a matter of fact, Clark Clifford is the American who brought the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, BCCI, onto American shores in 1989 or 1990. Okay, BCCI was a huge drug money laundering bank. Now, the CIA was designed for Clifford by two brothers, John Foster and Alan Dulles, the Dulles brothers, Dull Duller and Dulles. Okay? John Foster was Secretary of State under Dwight Eisenhower. Alan Dulles was DCI, get used to the term, Director of Central Intelligence, DCI. From 53 to 61, John Kennedy fired him after the Bay of Pigs. What was their profession? Wall Street lawyers from the firm Sullivan and Cromwell, the most powerful law firm, wouldn't we agree on that, on Wall Street? By the way, who are Enron's attorneys? Sullivan and Cromwell. Wall Street lawyers. Okay. Bill Casey. All right. Most of us are old enough to remember Iran-Contra. What was Bill Casey's job for Richard Nixon? No, for Richard Nixon, not Ronald Reagan. No? Who said SEC? All right, see me afterward. I'm going to give you a free Portland videotape for answering that right. He was chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Stanley Sporkin, who was the CIA's general counsel, their top-ranking lawyer during Iran. He used to email Oliver North, to Stanley from Ollie, to Ollie from Stanley. It's another fine mess you've gotten us into. Okay? Stanley Sporkin, retired recently as a U.S. District Court judge in Washington, D.C., CIA general counsel in the 1980s. What was his job before he was the CIA general counsel? He was general counsel of the SEC. David Daugherty, who was the CIA general counsel after Stanley Sporkin. Anybody know what he does now? You're going to love this one. Executive Vice President of the New York Stock Exchange for Enforcement. And a guy by the name of A.B. Buzzy Krongard. And I ticked off somebody at KPFA for pointing this out, but not my buddies. I didn't tick off anyway. A.B. Buzzy Krongard is currently the executive director, or ex-DIR, at CIA. The top three positions are DCI, Director of Central Intelligence, DDI, Deputy Director for Intelligence, and Executive Director, ex-DIR. The current executive director of the CIA. What was his job before he went to the CIA in 1998? Oh, God, somebody's reading my newsletter. How many people here subscribe to From the Wilderness? Thank you, but we better get the rest of you before the night's out. CEO of Alex Brown, or A.B. Brown, a major investment bank. Actually, it's headquartered in Baltimore, but they trade on New York. A.B. Brown. Remember that. Now, how powerful is a drug dollar? By the way, does everybody agree that I've presented a case that there is a very deep, long-standing relationship between the CIA and Wall Street? As a matter of fact, six of the first seven DDIs of the CIA came directly from Wall Street to the agency. I thank my dear friend Peter Dale Scott over in Berkeley for pointing that out. Now, how many people here own stock? God, you kind of put your hands up like,